This program originally aired August 31st, 2009.
Welcome back. Talking with Arnie Breyer, an attorney with Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, Schreck. And we're just wrapping up the conversation on, you know, as a borrower, are you protected and from a judgment, deficiency judgment, or and non-recourse versus recourse? And sounds like you are, even if you refinance. Commercial properties, more of a chance of a hard-nosed judicial foreclosure, right?
Right.
And if we can ever find out, I just, you know, people always worry about this, and you see it in print, and you always want to avoid it, but I'd be curious if we could find out actually what happened in 08 or something, how many people actually went after, particularly in these hard times, how many banks actually went after and tried to do a judicial foreclosure versus what we see virtually all the time in Santa Barbara here, the trustee sale, the non-judicial.
Well, the other point that's important to note too is, particularly if you own commercial property and you have a loan, you'll often be able to negotiate the loan to be a non-recourse loan. Now, times are changing and the banks are more difficult now than it was 2 years ago. But your commercial loan may say on the face of it, this is a non-recourse loan. The lender cannot come after you for the balance. And that's something that was negotiated between the borrower and the lender.
And that's, so who would think that one would have an option to go to the lender and say, okay, I'll borrow this money from you. Usually the borrower is going there with his hat in his hand saying, please give me this money.
Well, especially now.
Especially now. So you might have a little less. So we're just going to finish up on this topic a little bit about bankruptcy issues and how that impacts this
right.
path.
One thing we're seeing a little more of now is when there's a foreclosure about to take place or a borrower has stopped making his payments either in a residential setting or more often in a commercial situation, the borrower is declaring bankruptcy. Now, once the borrower has declared bankruptcy, that effectively stops, at least for a period of time, the foreclosure proceedings. So what the bankruptcy court then determines whether that property, which is subject of a foreclosure, is an asset that should be available for the bankruptcy court to deliver to this creditor, the lender, as well as other creditors. What will often happen, and I know of at least one situation, local situation here in a commercial setting, what will often happen is the bankruptcy court will step in. It slows down the foreclosure process for a little while, but then the bankruptcy court typically looks at it and says, well, there's no value in the property in excess of the loan anyway, and allows the foreclosure to go forward. The other point to consider is bankruptcy is not this wonderful thing for people to go through. I mean, it's necessary, obviously, for people to go through under certain circumstances. Bankruptcy itself is a very expensive process. It can cost tens of thousands of dollars for a small company to go through bankruptcy.
How do they come up with the money if they're facing bankruptcy? You assume they don't have the capital or the cash flow.
Well, fortunately for bankruptcy attorneys, of which I am not, but fortunately for bankruptcy attorneys, they're the first ones that are paid. So before a bankruptcy attorney takes the matter, he or she ensures, in fact, that there's enough money there to cover the cost to go forward with the bankruptcy.
Okay, so it's not this golden grail thing that you want to just say, well, in the worst case, I'll just declare bankruptcy. It's got a lot of negative ramifications.
Right, and then a bankrupt party goes to a borrower down the road, and it's not great going through a foreclosure, and it's going to be difficult to get a loan, but under a bankruptcy, if you got through a bankruptcy, you probably won't be able to get financing for at least 7 years. And that's how long it takes for the bankruptcy to effectively leave the borrower's record.
Talking with Arnie Breyer from law firm of Brownstein Hyatt, so just seems like a good time for you to tell us what you do for a living. You said you're not a bankruptcy attorney. You seem to know a lot about judgments and leases and liability. So what people walk in and get to talk to you and hire you? What kind of problems do they have?
Well, on the real estate side, I head up the California and corporate practices for Brownstein Hyatt. We're a 220-person firm with about 25 lawyers here in Santa Barbara. My real estate practice is primarily...
And by the way, they're all out in the lobby monitoring the program, just in case I say something.
My real estate practice focuses on commercial real estate, representing buyers and sellers in commercial property. We have an extensive land use department to deal with the entitlement and zoning issues that California developers face. I'm not a land use attorney, but we have a large land use practice. I also represent companies buying and selling other companies and day-to-day corporate issues, corporate formation, LLC formation, C corporation formation, partnership formation.
Well, we're at a fork in the road here in the program because we have these two topics I'm looking at, and it's leases, the difference between commercial and residential leases, or this limited liability. So we just follow the outline and jump into leases first?
Sure.
I don't know. Well, and based, again, I mentioned this Santa Barbara News Press Sunday business section, August 30th. It was quite interesting. It was on Florida, and they went into a big mall, and there's a children's theater that went into this gallery in this mall, and they wanted to rent space below market, nonprofit, and they did it. And they're hoping that, you know, they're bringing in the families and the moms coming in. They're hoping to generate traffic. So suddenly these leases, these commercial leases, are entertaining doctor's offices, schools, daycare centers, kids' play gyms, office space in a mall. South Florida has been hit pretty bad, I think, in the commercial. So I don't know if we're seeing that here locally. I don't think we have that. We don't kind of have that vacancy rate.
Well, no, we're seeing not like they're experiencing in South Florida. I mean, part of the reason is Santa Barbara doesn't have 50 malls, hundreds of strip centers. We have a very unique situation here. But that being said, I know a few months ago from the number I read was in vacancies along State Street on the downtown corridor from the ocean up to Sola, I believe there was 50-some-odd retail vacancies.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think it was Bob Tuller from Radius Group. I spoke with him once at one of the UCSB economic forecasts, and I don't have the stats in front of me. And so what you're saying is true, and I actually saw that once on a headline, and it makes, you know, it's dramatic, and you do see the signs, so it's a reality. But he couched it a little differently and put it into the perspective of overall number of vacancies. And now this was a year ago. Obviously now it's worse. But he pointed out, and we discussed the vacancy percentages, commercial, retail, office in Santa Barbara, and compared it to Oxnard or Ventura.
Right.
And clearly, you know, it wasn't bad, and the overall percentage wasn't bad, and had it dropped all that. But the concentration seems to be on that State Street corridor where you see a lot of turnover.
And especially when you leave the retail side in office and industrial, we're still relatively low vacancy. We're really not doing so poorly here. But part of it also is that the difficulty and cost to develop in Santa Barbara, there's always been that natural check on preventing too much office space or too much industrial space being built here.
We've spent a lot of time over the years interviewing either attorneys, property managers on leases, residential leases, landlord-tenant issues, protection. And I'm not a commercial real estate agent, and I've helped people with leases in a peripheral manner because that's, you know, I'm also not a property manager. But I've always heard that with all the protections that we find for residential tenants, just like residential purchase contracts, everything is weighted towards protecting the buyer. Not so as much in commercial, true?
Correct. California is very much a residential tenant-oriented state. That being said, there are still protections for commercial tenants, but not to the extent that the residential tenants have. For example, as you and your listeners probably know, that many in the residential setting, tenants have the ability to make repairs that the landlord refuses or hasn't made in a reasonable period of time, and deduct those repair charges from up to 1 month's rent over a 1 year period of time.
Providing that they've given proper notice, made requests for the repairs, they've been neglected.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want someone listening to just go out there and put in their new jacuzzi and deduct it from next month's rent. That wouldn't fly.
Now, this is more along the lines of your toilet has been inoperable and you've gone through the process of notifying the landlord. And there is a process. The landlord has a period of time to go ahead and repair it. And then the landlord either ignores you or refuses to repair it. Under law, again, following the steps, the tenant is permitted to go and make the repairs to that toilet and deduct the repair costs from his rent, up to 1 month's rent once every 12 months. However, in the commercial setting, the tenant cannot do that. The tenant has certain rights, generally spelled out in the lease, to maybe abate, maybe withdraw or offset that amount from rent. More often than not, the tenant does not have that right. It's just whatever's spelled out commercially in the lease is what the tenant has the right to do. The tenant does not have, by law, the right that a residential tenant would have.
And talk a little bit about, talking with Arnie Breyer, attorney with Brownstein Hyatt here, Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Talk a little bit about the two major kind of leases in commercial, what's known as gross and triple net, and that kind of spells out things about repairs, right?
Right.
And I don't think there's any such animal in residential.
No, that's a good point.
Well, although there is paragraphs in a residential lease where you might check that who's going to take care of the maintaining the yard.
Right. Who's going to be responsible for the gardening, the pool, or whatever it is.
Right.
But a triple net lease is a commercial term, or a net lease is a commercial term, which means the tenant is responsible for electrical, gas, property taxes, insurance for the structure.
It's just when I think about that, I just think, well, why don't you just own the property?
Right.
Because essentially you're paying the landlord's every expense. You got to buy him dinner once a week. It's a bizarre.
and that's a very good point. I mean, for instance, the Walgreens Center in Goleta. I'll bet dollars to donuts that's on a triple net lease, even though Walgreens is there. Walgreens is there for they're the only party that occupies that building. But a third party owns that building. Walgreens leases it from that third party. And Walgreens pays rent, property tax, the insurance to upkeep it, the maintenance of the gardening around it. If someone gets hurt, plumbing. Every aspect of that building is the responsibility of Walgreens, but except Walgreens does not own the property. Now, Walgreens probably has a reason to do it. Walgreens has to keep their stock up, or for whatever the reason is, they find it more advantageous to be a tenant than to be an owner and to commit the capital funds to own the property.
Right. I jokingly said they might as well own it, but of course, it's a huge capital expenditure obligation to own a property. But in description here, it's why people who own residential property, and I have a good friend that's been on the program many times, lives down in the Inland Empire, owns 28 units, triplexes, sixplexes, spread out, old buildings, 28 toilets, 28, sinks, or double the sinks, but in a lot of maintenance, old buildings, and he's, always a vacancy, and he's often toyed with the idea of just selling and getting into a commercial property, which in the great market, you sit back as a commercial property owner and you feel like you don't have to, there's very little interaction and maintenance, right?
Right. The issue is, though, if you're
providing that Walgreens is there making the lease
right.
payments, they leave.
If you're a commercial owner and your sole tenant is Circuit City, it's a little difficult right now because there's nobody to go pay the rent. But what we often see on these triple net, single standing facilities, like a drugstore, like a big box tenant, is it's an owner who's looking for almost an annuity. It's a lower payment, but a regular payment, and they don't have to worry about anything except for cashing the check and hoping that the tenant stays in business.
Did we cover that?
Yes.
Okay. Because we're going to take a break. We're talking with Arnie Breyer from Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck, a local law firm here affiliated actually nationwide, I guess.
Right, we're the former Hatch and Parent.
Former Hatch and Parent, but right. But Brownstein Hyatt, they have offices. You have offices throughout the country or just in the West area?
The main office is in Denver.
Okay.
Large office in Vegas, Santa Barbara, Albuquerque. And we're actually the sixth or seventh largest lobbying practice in D.C.
And so we'll take a quick commercial break, come back and jump in and see if we have time for a few minutes on why you might set up a limited liability as an individual, even if you just own just a couple of houses. But you made me think of something when you said, what was the last thing you were saying about the tenants, the commercial tenants? And
if the tenant goes out of business.
Oh, annuity. You mentioned annuity. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me about people who are trying to get investors to, you know, you get 10 people to pony up $100,000 or you get 10 people to pony up $500,000 and they're buying a $5 million commercial space. And they're, it's just blue chip, AAA, we're going to have this, it's on a 30-year lease. You just give us your money, and we'll just give you the annuity, and you don't have to, management, nothing. And I guess some people are doing it, and it's working, but are you familiar at all with this?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, but it's, again,
from the look on your face, it looked like you lost some money on this deal.
Well, you're looking at, there's a lot of tenants right now that are having significant problems, that are going out of business. I mean, Bennigan's disappeared just a few months ago.
Okay. So you got to do your due diligence on that. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com, 452-2428. We'll come back and talk a little bit about limited liability companies.